Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're back. It's Deb Wolf. I'm your host today. And with me today is a special guest. We've never talked about this on the show before. Mindy Tenenbaum is coming to us to talk to us about doggy DNA, believe it or not. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Deb.
Well, I know you're calling from Toronto, and I'm calling from outside Vancouver, and our engineer in California is actually a secret Canadian originally also.
Wow.
So All Paws Pet Talk Radio in American Airways, we're coming to you live from Canada today. But the topic of the day that we're talking about is DNA, and right away I think of detectives and things like that. But this is about how to figure out what your mutt really is, isn't it?
That's exactly what it's about. But it's very CSI, but it's for dogs.
And is it a saliva, a spit test, or is it? Do you have to do something nasty to your dog to figure?
No, they're called buccal swabs, and what they are is they're cheek cell swabs. So some people think it's saliva, but actually, even when you do see it on a CSI show and they rub the inside of someone's cheek, they're actually getting the cheek cells, and that's what
right.
we use. The cheek cells have the cleanest DNA that you can get, which is why they use it.
Why does a person want to know that? Is it just the people who have mutts and they think, gosh, I'd really like to know what I got? Is that it?
You know what, Deb? I think that that's the number one reason. It's curiosity. Sometimes people come to us because primarily people come to us because exactly that. They have a mutt. They want to know what it is. Sometimes mm-hmm. people come to us because maybe they bought a dog or adopted a dog that they were told, you know, oh, my dog's a pug, and then they've had it for a while, and they're like, it doesn't really look like a pug, or they were
it's
told the dog.
It's 50 pounds. It's a 50-pound pug.
It happens all the time. Or they were told the dog was a purebred, but it's got something that makes them believe that it's not a purebred. Or sometimes, you know, they go to a shelter or a humane society, and they adopt a puppy. And in the shelters, oftentimes, it's just their best guess as well because they don't know the parents or the background of the dog. So
sure.
they, you know, we just had a lady call us just a moment ago, and she has a tiny 4-month-old puppy. She has no idea how big it's going to get, how to train it, what health issues to look out for. So she's very motivated to learn what the breeds of the dog are.
You know, years ago, I had these customers. They had this beautiful golden retriever called Emerson. And a few years later, they adopted this dog, and they told me they bought it from a really well-known breeder. And it was this, you know, super, super fancy golden retriever. And I looked at this dog, and I said, you know, it's red, right? And they're like, yes, yes, it comes from a line of very dark goldens. And I said, you know, it's really thin and tall, right? And they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? I said, there's got to be half Irish Setter in this dog. Oh, no, no, look, here's the papers. Here's sure enough, that dog grew up, and it was an Irish Setter cross golden retriever. No question.
Amazing.
Long feathers, long-limbed, long-legged. I don't think the people cared one iota. It was a great dog, you know. But it can, I mean, if you're buying something because of allergies, this is particularly important, I think. You know, you don't want something that's going to make your kid sick and then you have to give it up. And, you know, when you specifically went out to look for a poodle cross or a poodle, I could get how this would really be important in some cases. What about the dangerous cases? Like, I would hate to see this used against mutts. So my 2% pit bull is now illegal in Ontario or something like that. Is that a worry for you?
It's not a worry to us. We do get involved in that, often not by choice. We sometimes get subpoenaed and things like that. But generally, pit bull is a funny one because technically speaking, an American pit bull terrier is not a recognized breed, even though a lot of people don't realize that. It's not AKC recognized or CKC recognized. So an American pit bull terrier is actually a type of breed, And that type of breed is generally going to report back a combination of American Staffordshire Terrier, Boxer, Boston Terrier, Bulldog, and sometimes Bull Terrier and Bull Staffordshire
Which
Terrier.
Which totally makes sense, because that's how they took the tiny little stout Staffy and made it bigger and tougher. So it totally makes sense. That's
exactly
the lineage.
So a lot of people have used the test in positive ways, because a lot of times where there's breed-specific legislation, people's dogs get deemed a pit bull, and sometimes they're not. Like, we've had to present DNA in court for dogs that don't even really look like a pit bull, and they've come back like Boxer, Lab, Rottweiler mix or something, and they're not even in. They've got one common breed with it, but not really. And so, you know, it's helped them. And then some people, aren't sure, so they want to test. But the results of people's tests are confidential between the person who purchased the test from us and them. We only provide them with the results. And if if they want to validate what they think and they get results that may, put their dog in jeopardy of the law, then, they don't need to share those results with anybody either, if that makes sense.
Well, I wonder what percent would be enough to trigger the pit bull law to ban your dog. I mean, 2%, 10%, 50%, 60%? Like, where, and if the pit bull traits and physicality is combined with something completely marshmallow, as opposed to, say, pit bull mastiff, pit bull dobie, there's a huge difference here. And these laws, I just think they're terrible. These laws just don't hit the right
people.
Well,
it's a really funny thing, Deb, because the times that we have gone to court, what strikes me the most is that it's such an unusual law in that, like, every jurisdiction's different, every animal control services and pounds that we've dealt with have different ways of looking at it. In some places, if your dog looks like a pit bull and it tests back Chihuahua, it's a pit bull because it looks like a pit bull. And in some areas, they will use the DNA testing, but even judges don't even know what to make of it. Like, it's amazing when we've been in court and I'm trying to help somebody get the dog back, and it's just nobody knows what, because it's just such a weak law, because it's being taken into the system because it's an American Pit Bull Terrier, but there's no such thing. It's a very fuzzy. Yeah.
The insurance companies have gone one further. They've made a list of, by looking at the stats on any dog ever who ever did anything wrong, they've compiled this list that now includes 75 dogs that they try to make, kind of like default your insurance and exempt.
Yeah.
And then there's all these breeds. It's nuts. It's not even pit bulls. It's Airedales. I'll go through the list. It's crazy. Akbash, Akita, Blue Blood Bulldog, Alaskan Malamute, Alsatian, American Bulldog, American Husky, Pitbull, Staffy, American Wolf Dog, Anatolian Shepherd. I'm just in the A's, right? This is nuts.
That's crazy.
Arikara Dog, Australian Cattle Dog, Australian Shepherd, Belgian Malinois, Belgian Sheepdog, Belgian Tervuren. Those are all police dogs.
What?
Blue
what?
Healer. What? I know. Borbul, Borzoi. Those are the tall, skinny ones with the strange heads. Boston Terrier, Bouvier de Flanders, Boxer, Bulldog, Terrier, Bull Mastiff. I know. The clown of the dog world. Cane Corso, Catahoula, Leopard Dog, Caucasian Shepherd. You know what? I'm running out of time. We're going to have to come back for the rest of this list of dangerous dogs. That's really nuts. We'll be back in a second, and we'll be talking more about DNA for your dog on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
And anytime you're near,
your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Okay, we're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm now regretting I decided to read this list because it's so long. But here's a list of dogs that may make your insurance not count.
Chinese Sharpei. You know what, Deb, just to quickly interrupt, maybe you'd be faster reading the dogs that are not on the list.
I know, it's ridiculous,
I'm just kidding.
Hey? But honestly, I mean, the only one I can think of that's not on the list is the poodle, which is interesting, and it makes sense. But they're so overrepresented with the three sizes, and they don't make the list. So that's a clear sign that they're discerning. And
is
not
golden retriever? Is golden retriever on the list?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chinese Sharpei, Chow Chow, Colorado Dog, Doberman, Dogo Argentino, Dorque de Bordeaux, English Mastiffs, English Springer Spaniel, Eskimo Dog, Mountain Dog, Fila Brasileiro, Fox Terrier, French Bulldog, German Shepherd Dog, Golden Retriever, Greenland Husky, Great Dane, Great Pyrenees, Italian Mastiff, Kangal Dog, Keyhound, Commodore, oh my gosh, this list is long, Kuhas, Labrador Retriever, Leonberger Mastiff, Neapolitan Mastiff, Newfoundland, Otterhound, Presa Canario, Presa, a bunch of Presas, Pug, Roddy, Wolfhounds, St. Bernard, now that's ridiculous. They save people in the snow, people. Samoyed, Scottish Deerhound, Siberian Husky. All they want to do is run. Spanish Mastiff, Staffordshire Bull Terrier. Oh, he's on the list twice, just in case we didn't see him the first time. Timber Shepherd, Toso Inu, Tundra Shepherd, and the Wolf Spitz. The Wolf Spitz is a cute little white fluffy dog. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. But I can see how people are going to need DNA. And we've got to get on this. This list is nuts.
That's crazy. That's just completely unacceptable that somebody would create a list like that.
But there's a lot. If you go online and look, you can find out more about how to stop breed ban legislation, because it's not just the pit bulls they're going for. It's all of us who love dogs. So with your DNA test, this is something I get asked a lot by people. They look at their dog and they say to me, is he maybe wolf or coyote, because he sings with the ambulances, or he always runs with wild dogs in the summer, or they have some trait that they're noticing. Can you test for that?
We get asked that a lot. We cannot test for the canine type breeds, the wolves, the coyotes, the foxes, because first, the DNA in those types of breeds is so diverse, and it varies from region to region. You can have a wolf in one area and maybe 30 miles away, another wolf, and their DNA can be completely different. It changes really drastically. So it's much too diverse for a test like this. And in our experience, we've not seen, even people who think that their dog does have coyote or wolf in it, we've not seen it. It always comes back something that looks like that, like maybe a Malamute Husky or something. But it's not very common that those breeds are in the dog. But if they are, we're not able to test for them.
Well, if people are listening and you're wondering that about your dog, is my dog part coyote, is my dog part wolf, you can send me the picture at All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'll do my best to tell you. I've been working with dogs, wolves, and coyotes for a couple of decades now. I hate to admit it, but it's true. And I can tell by looking. I can tell by the way. Well, one tip-off is a wolf or coyote will use more of their facial muscles than a regular dog. So when your dog, when your dog's irritated or pissed off, you will see many, many, many more wrinkles in that muzzle. They are expressing themselves in a different way. I'm not sure if it's perhaps more muscle control or if it's just their way of communicating, but that's one tip off that every time I see that with the masses and masses of extra, like the dog just looks extra, extra, extra vicious and menacing because of all these folds where the skin wrinkles when he's angry. If you see that, chances are you've got a wolf or a coyote. There's also things about the way they walk and the way they stand. And most of the time, contrary to myth, they are not extra brave. They are actually extra cowardly. So if you've got a really boastful, gregarious, outgoing dog, he's probably not a wolf or coyote cross. Okay, so let's keep going with some of this. When I test my dog, I tick thing, I scrape it on his cheeks, I put it in some kind of container. Is this gross to do? Is this disgusting?
Oh, no, it's basically, the swab looks like a long Q-tip. And you just rub it on the inside of the cheek. There's two of them. You do two. And you put it in an envelope. You let it air dry for about 20 minutes. And you mail it back to us. It's not gross at all.
Okay. And then how long till I find out?
So it takes us usually less than a week to get the results. But we take two samples in case one of them is contaminated or doesn't have enough DNA on it. And if that's the case, we have to run your second swab. So that can add about 5 days onto the test. But generally speaking, your results are available online in a week and then mailed out to you, and you'll have them in 2 to 3 weeks, depending on where you live. But you can check them online usually within the week that we received your test.
How accurate is it?
It's extremely accurate with some cautions. It's if we have a clean sample with a breed that's in our database, it's 99.997% accurate. If there's any contamination, then that's going to pose a problem, and dogs have really high levels of oral bacteria, and that can affect their sample from time to time, and it can either we can sometimes have to send you another test to get another sample, or it can also sometimes skew the results if there's too much bacteria. And of course, we don't have every breed in our database, so if your dog is one of the more uncommon breeds, it will report the foundation breeds of that dog. So some of the Presa breeds that you skipped over in that list, we don't have those breeds. If it's not a registered breed, then for sure we can't have it, because we use the AKC as our baseline. Their breeds as our baseline for determining the breed.
Right.
But sometimes if it's not a common breed, like sometimes people think they have, I can't think off the top of my head, like a really uncommon breed. And
right,
it's
okay.
Generally not a dog that's seen in the mixed breed population very often.
An Irish Water Spaniel. How about that? You got
there
one of
those? You go. An Irish Water Spaniel, they think it's a cross, and they adopted it at the Humane Society from their area. And so we don't – more breeds in the database, the way that our test works, it plays around with the accuracy, so we've really focused on the top breeds, and our list represents about 97% of the common mixed breed population. So an Irish Water Spaniel, a Russian Wolf Dog, certain breed, we're not going to have them. So if
right.
you do have that, it's going to report back whatever. It'll just keep going back to the foundation breeds of that dog.
For
so you'd
people,
never know.
Okay. So with Labradoodles, for example, they're registered in Australia but not in America. If someone were curious, because maybe they bought a hypoallergenic dog, or they thought they did, and can they test for poodle in a Labradoodle and make sure that they indeed did get? See, the problem there, though, is unless the daddy was a poodle, you don't get that non-shedding coat. So how would your test help someone who thinks maybe they were sold a shedding animal when they were told it would be a doodle and not shed?
Well, some of the designer dogs are tricky, because I think a lot of people don't understand how the DNA works. But if you had what you thought was a Labradoodle and you tested it with us and it was a Labradoodle, it should come back 50% poodle and 50% Labrador Retriever, because you need to take a pure lab and a pure poodle, and then you're going to get 50% of the DNA from each parent, even though it's random, because one parent's 100% lab and one parent's 100% poodle. You can only get a 50-50 Labradoodle you're going to get. But some people think you can take a Labradoodle and another Labradoodle, and you're going to get a Labradoodle. But technically, that's not true, because since you're randomly getting 50%, what's to say you didn't get 50% lab DNA from one parent and 50% lab DNA from another parent, and there's no poodle in your Labradoodle, or 75% lab, 25% poodle. Like the only way to get a pure breed like that is to take a pure and a pure and then mix them to get the hybrid, if that makes sense. You can't take a Labradoodle and a Labradoodle and expect to get puppies that are Labradoodles, because there'll be various combinations of both.
There's no consistency yet. Yeah. And also, if the male isn't the poodle part, you don't get the poodle coat. And I think people don't realize that. But,
yeah, there's some dominant genes with those breeds, too. You're right. And it's such a new breed, too, that at least, you know, in North America, I don't think we don't have it. I think there is a baseline established for that, but we don't have it.
Okay.
In our test.
So if people want to do this with their dog, where can they get a hold of you? Because we're running out of time. I'm so
okay,
sorry
well,
to say. It's been great having you, Mindy.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. The best thing is for them to go to our website at dnamydog.com. It has all our contact information. It has a great FAQ section and lots of information for anybody who wants to learn more.
This is something great as a present, I think, for that hard person to buy for. Okay, everybody, stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And
you know that.
Disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Hello, you're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we've got a dog trainer coming to us right now, and you know I'm a dog trainer too, and so we would love it if you would call us with your dog training problems. Maybe your dog chases cats. Maybe your dog jumps up on everybody or somebody. Maybe your dog pulls you and is rude. Maybe your dog takes off and won't come when called. There's a lot of things we could help you with today, and I think we're going to start with a standard poodle. Which, you know, I breed standard poodles, and they're so, so trainable that it really puzzles me how often I get a call from an adolescent standard poodle's owner about this exact problem, which is jumping and mouthing people, especially joggers and cyclists and random people who are very active when they're out. So today we've got two trainers. You're used to me. We've got a special guest today. So instead of me hogging the floor, I'm going to turn it over to Melody from SparkWatch.com. She's calling to us from St. Catharines, Ontario, which is right near the border. So she probably has American and Canadian doggies. I'm on the other side of the country near Vancouver, and I too get American and Canadian doggies. They all train up the same. But Melody, what would you suggest for these people with this standard poodle named Toby who recently, they just moved from America to Canada, the dog's out of sorts, they know he's out of sorts, but he got out and he bit a teenager, and another time they were walking at a park and he tried to bite a jogger, and they've had increasing issues the last week and they're emailing into the show. So what can they do?
There's some tools that you can use. Basically, I start with formal training first. You have to be able to, I call it bomb-proof your dog. You are training them in obedience in a group setting, and the dog then gets used to being around other dogs and other people while respecting who's on the end of their leash and respecting those commands. So formal training absolutely must come first. The tools that you can use when you're out jogging, all that, I mean, there is a gentle leader and that's a, kind of like a muzzle-like thing that goes over top of their nose. I try and stay away from those because I believe good training helps more, and your voice becomes a tool to redirect your dog and respect for those commands that are coming forth. That's how I train. You should never have your dog off leash unless you have 100% recall. That is paramount. And we also have what's new. It's pretty popular in the States. It's called a Yellow Ribbon Project. And what it is if your dog needs space, you have a yellow ribbon tied on your leash, and that just lets the public know that, oh, my dog is out and he's friendly and he's being trained, but he needs a little bit more room around him. He's easily startled by people or other dogs and that. So just give him a little bit of more room.
Oh, that's interesting. I never even heard of that. I've heard of Good Canine Citizen, and I've heard of bomb-proof horses, that's for sure. But I like the idea of a bomb-proof dog. It's how I describe my Vegas, my oldest standard poodle who's been in parades and hospitals, and nothing rattles this guy. Absolutely nothing. It just doesn't matter. He just looks up with curiosity and interest to everything that comes along. But part of that's training. Part of that's personality, though, don't you think? Some dogs are just a little more nervous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't watch your dog 24/7. And certainly when you're dealing with any kind of a rescue breed, and that you don't know what their issues were, and we need to deal with those behavior issues. I'm also a canine good neighbor evaluator for our Canadian Kennel Club. So, and I have 3 therapy dog programs. So we do intensive training for all of these dogs and in this bomb-proofing that I call.
You know, earlier today we were talking about insurers, and they mentioned there's a 75-dog list of dogs that could negate your insurance, and one of them is a golden retriever, and I just heard whining in the background there. What kind of cuteness are you surrounded by over there in St. Catharines, Ontario?
I do have golden retrievers, and we just had a litter of 10 puppies 3 weeks ago, so they're in the whelping pen right behind me. So they've just had their lunch, and now they're just settling down to sleep.
When are you going to start them on solid food?
In the next week or so. Their teeth are coming in now, and Mom is already weaning a little bit off the nursing. Mm-hmm. She's leaving the whelping pen a little bit more often. The puppies are huge. They're doing really well. So
nice.
About 5 weeks, I usually start them on the puppy mush.
Right.
And I couple that with powdered formula or the liquid formula just to give them a little bit extra in the nutrition-wise. And then we do the crate training, too, before they go to their forever homes. This will help our new owners because that seems to be the biggest hurdle for new dog owners. So I do all the crate training for them. And then they will come back to me for training or an acceptable training facility near them.
It's nice to have that kind of control. It really is, because you start them off right. And, you know, a good breeder will start you off right and will be willing to take your calls and give you advice along the way and will be willing to have you visit more than once to meet the dog and pick the dog you want and will be insisting on checking you out. Perhaps, like with me, I actually go make sure they have the fenced yard they claim and things like this. So,
I do the same thing.
You want some interaction there. You don't want to just feel like you put your money down, you get your dog, because sometimes those people are hard to get a hold of. And when you visit, make sure you meet parents. I can't tell you how often I get a dog that's really quite difficult for the people who've got him. And they did buy it from a breeder, but at the time they'll say to him, I'll say to him, well, did you meet the mother? And they'll say, oh, no, she was in a cage. She was very, very aggressive. We couldn't meet her. Well, that's not right. That's a key to thinking, wait a minute. She's teaching her puppies who to like and who not to like. Now, while it's true, a mom with day-old puppies is not going to want you visiting. Once the pups are ready, 6, 7, 8 weeks for visitors, she should be able to handle you coming. Maybe play fetch while you visit. Maybe eat something. Maybe just sit with them. You know, you have to supervise and make sure everybody's calm and everybody washes their hands and all this kind of stuff. But really, the mother should be social enough to visit with people and the father, too. Right? Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. It's a big red flag. And I've had those kind of clients, too, where, yes, they've picked out their puppy, but weren't allowed to see either parent. Mother being the most important. You have to be able to see the mother and see her temperament because she does all the disciplining for the pups. She sets the pack order. She's the one that's been caring for them. And that, so if she has a negative personality, that's usually a red flag for an owner that maybe this is not the pups for you.
Oh, absolutely. And the mom, you know, genetically, the father contributes, the mother contributes. But like you're saying, father doesn't teach puppies anything. Mother teaches them who to be afraid of, who to trust, what to like, what if to swim or not to swim, what to eat, what to not eat, how to roll when you're intimidated, how to not roll when you're not, all this social stuff that they really,
absolutely,
really need. And that's why I'm sure you agree, you don't get rid of your puppies early, do you? How old must
they be? Absolutely not. In fact, I keep them closer to 9 weeks. And because this is a late fall litter, they wouldn't be going home until about the 15th of December. And I've even offered to my clients, I'll keep them over Christmas because of the hectic season and that. And being a breeder yourself, you know that we care so much about our dogs. A lot of
testing, genetic and health clearances and research and different vaccinations and training has gone into it. So we don't take it lightly, just adopting out our dogs. And I've said this to my students, too, and most of my students have been with me 4 or 5 years. It's become their club. I'm their trainer for life. They can come back to me at any time. They can call me. They can email me with their questions. And that's what a responsible breeder is. We train people. We make them better dog owners, better dog handlers.
And I do think people sometimes don't realize that breeding is very expensive. You get one puppy who swallows a toy or something and needs surgery, there goes all your profits. You get any disease at all, and you can be keeping puppies late and vaccinating late and antibiotics and who knows what. And, you know, so you're really keeping your mama dog as sound nutritionally and in every way that you can before. And that costs a lot of effort, time, and energy. But then, like right now, my red standard poodle is about to deliver. Her due date is yesterday or today. And, like, I've been sleeping on the couch. This is hard work. This
yes,
is intense.
Is.
I'm her midwife. Like, we are so attached. I can't go anywhere, you know. I have backup for my kids in case I miss their school carnival if she goes into labor. Like, we're pretty attached. Okay, everybody, we're going to come back and talk more about dog breeding and dog training and well, everything else our guests bring into the show. Stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Hello, you're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Today you've got two trainers, Deb Wolf, and we've got Melody from SparkWatch.com. SparkWatch.com, everybody look it up. I bet you'll see three-week-old golden retriever puppies. Okay, so SparkWatch.com, we've got Melody standing by, and I was just saying how I'm sleeping on the couch, and this dog and me were inseparable, and I can't have any plans. And you might think, well, that's crazy. My grandparents had dogs, and they just threw them in the yard, and they had puppies, and everything was fine. Everything's fine till it's not. And puppies can be born needing help, getting the sack off, getting breath, getting to nurse. Mama cannot realize she's had the first one or the last one, or not realize she's had more inside her. And if you don't make sure they all come out and everything else with it, she could die. So, I mean, this is pretty serious, right? This is not lightly taken.
Absolutely. In fact, this litter here was out of the litter of 10, there were 3 breech. And if I didn't know what to do, my female would have been in serious trouble. This is my biggest pet peeve with backyard breeders. They think that they're going to get their money back from the purebred dog that they got by having a litter with any other golden or mixed breed or what have you, not realizing, like you say, the nights, the sleepless nights on the couch, the monitoring her temperature, the heating pad, the heating lamps, making sure everybody's nursing, making sure she's producing enough milk, weighing these pups every day, so on and so forth. I mean, it's huge. Like the first 2 weeks, it's a 24-hour operation here. If I'm not here, my husband's here, and that these pups are being watched, and so is the mom, and making sure she eats, because every new mother knows that you eat last. You feed the kids.
And you know what? The directions have to change, too. You can't leave directions that are good for a week, because what's important this week, that the light be just warm enough for them, next week might cook them. And then a week later, well, now they're moving around. They might eat the cord, like, and they might jump out and not be able to get back in or get stuck under. I mean, everything's changing constantly. And you say the first 2 weeks are hard. That's true in some ways. But the last 2 weeks, oh, my God, they're trouble.
Yes.
And 4 poops a day times 10 puppies is 40 poops a day. Little tiny pooplets that you can't even find that you get under your shoes. I mean, there's a lot going on with this, right?
True enough. It is a labor of love.
Yeah, and it is hard to make money at it. You have to really do a good job over a long haul to make it profitable at all. And I think people don't realize, and they don't realize that you know, the cost of this is really on their female dog a lot of times.
Absolutely.
One thing I want to ask you about, because recently I was told by the kind of authority veterinarian around here that breeding, that the rules have changed regarding what vets recommend. And it used to be breed, then skip a heat, breed, then skip a heat through the course of her breeding life. And now they're saying they would rather you start later, end earlier, and do almost every heat. Now, I think that's crazy. I think once you've bred twice in a row, you should at least take a break. So I did twice in a row with my young poodle once, took a break, did twice in a row with another dog once, took a break. And now I'm at the stage, they're still very young, and it's possible I might do it again, but I'm kind of waffling, which is the better way to go, which is best for her. And, you know, I always take them in for their pre-maternity exam and ask his opinion again and all that sort of stuff. But it's a tough, you gotta really consider the health of your girl.
Yes, you do. And I actually don't. I don't do the double breeding like that. We have to, here in Canada, the rules are sort of like any time after 18 months and their health clearances and that, they can have their first litter. I only breed my females three times, and then they're retired. And I don't do it every heat. I would skip a heat. So once a year, I might do a letter, because that's not my main focus, is breeding golden retrievers. My main focus is training, and then I breed for a show dog for myself and then continue on our line. Yeah.
And, okay, when you finish breeding these girls, are they up for adoption?
I have in the past done that. Right now we have 10 adults and that, but they all have multiple jobs. They aren't just my kennel dogs. Because I'm a trainer, I do multiple disciplines of training. So, for instance, one of my dogs is in Afghanistan right now and in Brazil. He's a bomb detection dog.
Nice.
I do search and rescue, man tracking, scent detection, training, and then the agility and fly ball and that, because I believe dogs need jobs. So
do you think any dog, any breed can be trained to find things?
No.
How does someone know if they've got a dog that would be good at this?
The training starts with getting their nose on the ground. Most dogs, like your hounds and all that, are very, very good at doing that. My retriever's very good at the scenting of the ground. Some dogs are just not predisposed to that. That's why I think dogs with jobs. You got to find a job that's best for your dog and your breed of dog, and then you're going to have a balanced dog, because now he's got a job to do.
One little trick I do, just in case people are listening and they're thinking, oh, my dog's really not a hound or a retriever, but I wish I could get him to find something. One thing I do is, well, two things. I get my dogs, all of them, to find the car. And I get my dogs, whenever I can, people who introduce me to their children and dogs, I get their dogs to find their kids by name. It's really easy to do. And most dogs will do it. All dogs will do it. You put a cookie on the car. You walk away from the car. You say, go find the car. And you give them a cookie. And you do it farther and farther and farther until the dog will just find the car, always on a leash. Do the same thing with the kids. The kids hide in an easy 2 feet away and 5 feet away. Then they hide behind a sofa. Then they really hide. The dog knows if he finds them by name, he gets a treat. Now you've got a dog who can actually help you get out of the woods or the trails and find your car. Because he knows where it is, even though you don't. And when your kids aren't coming at the playground. It does take training, but it's
takes training.
Okay,
That's a great winter sport to do, too, when we don't always exercise our dogs as often as we should on the daily based on weather conditions. Search gains are great in the house. Get that brain exercised.
What would you like people to know about Goldens? Do you think there are some misconceptions? Because we rarely have a Golden Retriever breeder on the air. I'd just like to clear it up. I think sometimes people think they're nanny dogs and they should put up with, you know, kids piling on them, kids they don't know. Do you have anything that really bugs you about how people treat Goldens?
that they think that they don't need training, that they want that Norman Rockwell painting right away, that this lovely dog is laying on the front porch and we've got children around, and like that nanny instinct, like you said. Absolutely not. Dogs need training. Every dog needs training. And if you just even do the basic obedience training and then do maybe a level one, which gets their brain working and further distances away, and that this is going to save your dog's life. You want to eventually get to that leashless work and that, and go do that hiking and that, and have your dog check in every time with you when you call his name. And that comes from training. The dogs don't come pre-trained, unlike some people think that, I'm just going to open my front door, my dog's going to walk in, and he's going to know exactly where to go, and he's going to be very polite. That doesn't happen. It takes a lot of work. That's why that first 3 years is so pivotal with training. That brain is not developing until age three.
We have to go to break, but I'd like to bring you back for another segment if you're willing. Are you willing to stay tuned with us on All Paws Pet Talk Radio? Okay, so we'll do that. And I'm going to give you another list. This is a very short list, not like my 75-dog list of all the breeds the insurers don't want to insure. This is short, but it's one of the seven. And I want to see if when we come back from the break, you can guess why these dogs are on this list. It's not a bite list. It's something else. Okay, so these dogs do something the most. Chihuahua, right. Chihuahua, Karen Terrier, German Shepherd, Miniature Schnauzer, Scottish Terrier, Rottweiler, and Westie. Rottweiler's the only one that makes me go, huh? Really? But anyway, 1, 2, 3, 4, top 7 at what? Okay, so we'll be back in a moment on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy, I'm your doggy, and I love you.
Is your dog or cat a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Save 20% now at supergravy.com. Just enter radio at checkout. Try Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet. Your pet will love you for it.
I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food.
Hello, you're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf, and my guest coming up in a minute or two is Steve Sedek, and he's from HealthyPawsPetInsurance.com. Now, he's calling me from Seattle, and he's got clouds, and I've got sun, and I'm teasing him because that's what we do in the rainforest when we have sun. We rev it in. But I told you last week that one of my cats thinks he's skinny and he's fat and it cost me $300. I don't have vet insurance. I don't have pet insurance. And my lion cat decides to fit through some kind of grate or who knows what, gets stuck, then rips himself free, comes into the house with wounds all over him. I take him to the vet thinking, oh no, something must have got him, even though he's really a layabout indoor cat. But no, he was caught in some kind of gate. So even an indoor layabout cat can get caught in a gate and end up with $300 worth of surgery to repair the wounds and the cast. And now I have to go back every 3 days, $25 each time, to get the bandage changed and dressed and the wound and the stitches. Oh, boy, I wish I had Healthy Paws Pet Insurance for a lion. So welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Would my bills be less difficult for me right now if I had you on board?
You know, absolutely. The situation you described, essentially an accident that resulted in some sort of need for treatment as well as maybe some follow-up treatment, is exactly what Healthy Paws is there for. Not just things that relate to accidents, but also the many illnesses that can beset a dog or cat over their lifetime. Something as simple as diarrhea and vomiting, trying to do those diagnostics, it's amazing how much that can cost, upward to $1,500 nowadays. To the much
The first set of blood work is $200. That's what they get your permission for. Right when you're standing there and your pet looks like it's about to die, they go, can we have $200? So that's how you start, right?
Exactly.
And then it goes, and it goes.
And that's exactly what we're here for. It's all about, protecting yourself from the unexpected. And just like, people healthcare, the advances in veterinary medical treatment is great for pets, but it also costs a lot more money now. And so plans like ours can pay up to 90% of those vet bills, and that's quite affordable. It's only about $1 a day.
What about things that aren't accidents? Epilepsy, diabetes, cancer. What happens then?
With our plan, same thing. It's all covered. Our plan is really simple. If it's a accident or illness, as long as it's not a pre-existing condition, then you're covered, and you're covered for life. So things like epilepsy, cancer, those things can start to run into the, $5,000, $10,000 range nowadays, and you're entirely covered, unlimited benefits with us, and once again, we're paying up to 90% of those bills.
Like, you mean 90% of the bill the time you're diagnosed and treated, or you mean 90% of the bill ongoing for insulin or phenobarb or whatever it is you're getting to control the condition? Both?
Exactly, 90% for life. So if you are going through ongoing treatment, you need Rimadyl for, arthritis, and, the cancer treatment that is ongoing. No, we're there to help you care for your pet for a life of the pet. The key to pet health insurance today with us, as well as with any other company, is it's about enrolling early. Pre-existing conditions are the one thing that all pet insurance companies have to exclude. Of course, you can't wait for your sick-to-be pet and then get insurance. It'd be like getting insurance for your car after you got into an auto accident.
That makes total sense. What else? Is that the only thing that's not covered? Like, what if my dog bites my cat? It's my fault, really, kind of. Is that still covered?
It is still covered. Hopefully that's not something that is common. But no, absolutely, it's covered. The only thing we don't cover is what is commonly referred to as wellness or preventative care. Those are the things that you go into for 1 year. It looks like vaccinations, an annual checkup. Those are relatively inexpensive. They're manageable and they're expected. And we exclude those. In the world of insurance, when you start to cover things that are expected, one of two things has to happen. We have to charge you much more, which we want to make this affordable, or we have to start taking away some of that more complete coverage around accidents and illnesses that you described so that we can give you a few dollars back every year. In the world of pet insurance, you absolutely want to make sure you're covered for those costly, unexpected accidents and illnesses. Those are the things that are going to really hit your pocketbook.
How long would it take, though? Like, I'm registered with you and I'm paying, and I take my silly fat cat in, and I pay up front, right? So it's $300. Then how long am I waiting?
So you will file a claim. You will typically wait on your first claim with us about 10 days, and that's mostly because we're trying to get the medical records from your veterinarian so that we can do our simple medical review of, are any of these things pre-existing. Typically, if you're enrolling early, they're not, and so we pay within 10 days. Second claims are paid typically within 3 days. One other bonus about how we can work with you is oftentimes if you have a bill, let's say it's cancer treatment, and it's a $5,000 bill, not many people have that $5,000 to put up front. So we will work with you and your veterinarian to pay your veterinarian directly so you don't have to front that money. So our goal is to get you your money back as quickly as possible, again, oftentimes within 3 days, if you're paying directly. And if we can help you, if we can pay directly, we will take care of that for you.
What about odd things? Like, I recently had on a guy, maybe it was 4 months ago on All Paws Pet Dog Radio. He called the show to talk about his sister flying their dog from Washington, D.C., I think it was to Colorado, for like this state-of-the-art cancer treatment that couldn't be had anywhere else. It was the best place. Okay, what about stuff like that?
And just to clarify, you're asking about the actual cost of flying your pet to another location that treatment?
Well, I'm saying if the pet needs something that is unusual or hard to come by, or are you still going to cover it?
Oh, okay. So no, it's a great question. And, you know, certainly these are done on a case-by-case basis. And I have an example that's very similar. We, out here in the Northwest, up in Bellingham, we have a customer. And their dog had a tumor on its spine. And it could have gone through a couple of years of cancer, traditional chemotherapy treatment that's done in the pet space. But there is a new treatment coming from the people world that's now being applied, and there's only two veterinarians in California doing it. And just understanding kind of what the procedure was, if we could make it a better quality of life for the dog, and we felt that the procedure made sense and that there was, you know, a likelihood of success, we will absolutely work with the pet parent and those veterinarians that are doing these more advanced treatments, and we will cover those treatments.
What happens, and I know this is a little bit sensitive, and actually I have a really dear friend named Norman Jack Russell who was here for 17 years, and if anybody wants to see him, they can see him as an old doddering gentleman hobbling along on video on Camp Good Dog on Facebook. But Norman passed 2 days ago. He had to be put down after a stroke. And I want to ask you, when you get to that stage and the person has insurance, but maybe their vet doesn't know whether it's time to euthanize, maybe the dog is getting more and more conditions, or the cat, less and less quality of life, and the person can't bring themselves to make that decision. I mean, where does your insurance, when do you stop the treatment, or do you? You know, there's this sensitive time at the end of life when there's kind of a lot of expense. Where does your company sit with that?
So absolutely, and you know, I've been myself with my own pets, and it's absolutely up to the pet parent, certainly with the advice of their veterinarian, to make that decision on quality of life. That's not a decision for an insurance specialist as it relates to care. So the pet parent and the veterinarian choose to continue treatment. I'm hoping on the assumption that the quality of life will be there, we will keep paying. And if they choose to not continue treatment because they don't feel their pet will have quality of life, you know, we will support that. We happen to also pay for the cost of euthanasia in the case of an accident or illness to help them support that decision as well. Certainly, it's not something, though.
Okay, Steve. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming and joining us today. It sounds like for a dollar a day, you can be in a position where you never have to worry that you're going to put your dog or cat down when they need treatment, and that's peace of mind. So thanks for coming to us from HealthyPawsPetInsurance.com on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy, and I love you, and you know that.